gospel reading is Matthew, beginning is Matthew's chapter 2, beginning with the first verse. Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will govern my people Israel.' Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word, that I too may come and worship him.' When they had heard the king, they went their way. And lo, the star which they had seen in the east went before them till it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshiped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way." This is the word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God.
Well, friends, good morning and Happy New Year. It's 2020, and that the vision that I used to have back in the day. I had 2020, that's ideal, right? 2020 vision, not anymore. My optometrist friend told me that when an infant is born, what's your child's name?
Leah.
How old is Leah? She's talking to me as she's doing that. It's great. Yeah. That Leah does not have 20/20 vision. Actually, when you're born, my optometrist friend said your vision is something like 2400, which seems like it's not very good, except in God's good design of the universe, it's perfect. Because when you're Leah's age, the one thing you need to be able to see, you need to be able to see across the room, who's in the back, who's sitting in the balcony, what's across the street. When you're Leah's age, the one thing you need to see is mom. Although Leah's kind of looking toward me. Even now, I love her. Vision. When I was born, I guess my vision was 2400, got better, got to 2020, has declined. Fading vision. I watched my mother's vision gradually decline until the last few months of her life. She was totally blind. Couldn't see anything at all. John Milton wrote a poem about his own blindness. Everybody remembers from school the famous line, "They also serve who only stand and wait." But the line in his poem that interests me is the first. And it goes like this: "When I consider how my light is spent." I want us together to consider how in our lives our light is spent. The story that Cameron read to us, the story of the Magi, the wise men. In Bible times, they would have been thought foolish men, not wise men. They were astrologers. Like, it's kind of like a joke thing in Bible times. They looked at the stars and they believed that kings knew whether to go to battle based on astral phenomena. Your fate was set by the stars. I almost chuckle every time I think about these wise men, these foolish men. These Magi, I think about too many Christmas pageants that I have observed where, in my first church, they would take, these three dads would do this. They'd put on their bathrobes and Burger King crowns and walk in trying to look very wise. It was just hilarious. It was funny. I think about the Monty Python movie, The Life of Brian. They're following the star. They come naturally to the wrong house. The star is way up in the sky. They come in to Brian's house, and his mother says, "You're a bunch of foolish people wandering around in the dark." And they said, "Well, we brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh." And she says, "Well, why didn't you say so? Come on in." Just funny. In John Irving's novel, A Prayer for Owen Meany, Owen is sitting next to John during the Christmas service. They're singing We Three Kings. They come to the stanza, sorrowing, sighing, bleeding, dying. And Owen leans over to John and says, "This doesn't sound very Christmassy to me." And then I told a few of you on Christmas Eve something that happened one year during two of our services of the many. On Christmas Eve, the children do this little montage, and as we read about the shepherds coming, shepherds come. As we read about Mary coming, Mary comes. And so we read about the wise men coming, and Steve James is here back then, and he's reading. And so the wise men get right here to the step, and just as he said, "And they fell down and worshiped him," one of the wise men fell down. Everyone's very polite and quiet until one person laughed out loud. And that would have been me. It was funny. It was funny. The astrologers, this is amazing. The astrologers come, and part of the message in that, I think, is that people in the ancient world believed that there was this determinism. There was some fate that you were stuck with. And I think the story is trying to say the stars don't determine your fate. In fact, there's no determinism at all. You have freedom, you have responsibility, you have dignity. Your life can become something different from what it is or what it might seem fated to be. You can put your life in God's hands and it can be a beautiful thing, right? But then there's also the idea that the first people that figure out that the Messiah has been born are these astrologers. They're not even Jews, right? And it reminds me of the best line of the novel, The Shack, where Mac has a conversation with Jesus and he asks him, "Do all roads lead to you?" Jesus' answer is, "Not at all. Most roads don't lead anywhere, but I will travel any road to find you. I will travel any road to find you." God laid it on our hearts to develop beauty as a theme during this year. We started back in December. We're going to continue for a while here. A lot of aspects of beauty. One of the premises that I think we have is this. Anytime you see beauty, this is God reaching out to you. You might not even believe in God, but every time there's beauty in front of you, this is God reaching out to you, because God is beautiful. The heart and mind of God is beautiful. God created beauty, and God's strewn beauty all over the place, and that's a way that God reaches out to all of us. And there's so much beauty all over. We get fooled by the obvious pretty things, but there are beauty all kinds of surprising places. You know, it's under bridges. It's in an old drawer or closet in your home. It's in an old wrinkled face. It's in the night sky, which is what the Magi discovered. They looked up and they saw the stars. We have a guy coming in February. He's on the medical faculty at Duke. His name's Ray Barfield. He's absolutely amazing. He's going to talk to us about beauty and suffering. Like, that's something, that there can be beauty even in suffering. He wrote a book that I've been reading recently where he reminds us that Aristotle, the great philosopher, taught that when the stars move across the night sky, they make music. They leave a trail of music as the stars move across the sky. Now, scientists came along later and said they don't make any music. And Ray Barfield says it's a shame that they decided that. It was better when we thought that they made music, because if you lose the music, you lose the sense of the grandeur, the awe, the beauty of it. There's music in the heavens. There's music in all of the beauty around us. It's just ours to notice. All kinds of simple things in beauty. Things like everyday light, right? Like, there's just light out there. You take it for granted. Maybe in the same way you take gravity for granted. I think every morning we should give thanks to God that gravity is still working. If it wasn't working, we'd all be getting injured, banging against the ceilings and all here, right? But gravity works. There's everyday light out there. And because of the everyday light, you can see all kinds of things. There's just beauty hidden all over the place. Sometimes children notice it better than grown-ups, right? And one of the things that Ray Barfield talks about is that in everyday, if you go out into the light, one of the things that you notice is that you have a shadow. He says that the shadow is something that you should reverence, because if there's a shadow, it means you're there, right? If you weren't there, there wouldn't be a shadow, but if you're there, there's a shadow, so there's the light, but then there's also the shadow. It's always this way in God's world. We want everything to be pretty and nice and sweet, but there's always a shadow, isn't there? And that the shadow actually is part of the beauty. People ask me for book recommendations, and I'm not good at giving them because I read weird, obscure things. I read theologians like Karl Barth. Karl Barth, great theologian of the last century. He wrote this thing called Church Dogmatics. It's 13 volumes. Each one is like 700 pages with a small font. You would not want me to recommend this book to you. But sometimes when I'm reading things like this, I think about you and I want to read to you from a book like that. Remember Eudora Welty talking about in her novel, The Optimist's Daughter, there's an older couple, and it said that in the evening, instead of watching TV, that they would read books, and periodically they would read to one another. Oh, honey, listen to this. She said that when they did that, it was like the breath of life flowing between them. Like, I love that. So sometimes I read something in an obscure theology book, and I think about you, and I want to share it with you. Here's one. In all those 13 volumes of Barth's Dogmatics, this may be my favorite page. He says this: light exists as well as shadow. Creation has not only a positive but also a negative side. This is a mark of its beauty. In creation, there's not only a yes but also a no, not only a height but also an abyss, not only growth but also decay, not only beauty but also ashes, not only beginning but also end. There are hours, days, and years, both bright and dark, success and failure, laughter and tears, youth and age, gain and loss, birth and sooner or later death. In all this, creation praises its creator and Lord, even on its shadow side. Do you get that? That the beauty is the light and the dark. The beauty of suffering. If you think about this, you know that this is true. I talk to people sometimes, and they are there when someone they love dies. And it seems like it's total darkness and it's awful, but then people will say to me, it was beautiful. Isn't that interesting? Beauty. It's light and dark. I hate it when Christmas ends and the lights begin to come down. I don't want to pass judgment on neighborhoods. For 16 years, we lived in Deering Oaks, kind of near South Park. We moved a year and a half ago to Plaza Midwood. And when it comes to Christmas lights, I have to say Plaza Midwood is a superior neighborhood. Because here we are, January 5th, and most people still have their Christmas lights up. I'd like to think they're caught up in the Christmas spirit. They may just be lazy. I don't know. But the lights are still up. And I love the Christmas lights, right? Because, I mean, it's festive and it's fun. To me, it's the perfect symbol of God, right? God is the light in the darkness. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. And we put out lights, and it's an image of who we're supposed to be. We're a light to others. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. I love it that even pagans, right, people who don't believe in God, they'll put out lights at Christmas. It's like we all join in the party. It's such a beautiful thing. I hate for the lights to come down. We're going to hear the choir sing something really lovely about the work of Christmas. Howard Thurman, great African-American theologian last century, spoke of the work of Christmas. He said, after all the Christmas stuff is over, he says, then the work of Christmas begins. And what is the work of Christmas? The work of Christmas isn't, oh, well, let's get back to normal. And it's not, let's get ahead. And it's not, I'm right. And it's not, let's judge other people. The work of Christmas is to bind up the broken, to bring healing, to make music, to notice the beauty, the light. And ours, you got to shine light on the beauty to notice it. Somebody called me the other day and said, we're going to Rome, and I know you've been to Rome. Is there something off the beaten path that we should see in Rome? And I named a couple things. One that I mentioned, it says, you have to go to the church, San Luigi dei Francesi. It's near the Piazza Navona. And there are two fabulous Caravaggio paintings in there, except you won't notice them unless you've got a couple of euros, because you got to drop them in the little slot. And then the light comes on, and you see the painting. You see how that works? There's beauty in that church, but you don't notice it until you shine the light on it. We've got to shine the light on the beauty. Lisa and I went to the mountains over New Year's, and she found this old photo album that her mom had put together, and had those little black and white photos of Lisa when she was, you know, 2, and she was so cute, gosh, and she still is cute, if she asks you about that. She was so cute, all these cute family photos, and she's looking at them, and I tried to look at them, and I said, can we move over here under this lamp and sit close so I can see them? So it needed the light to see that beauty. So we've got to shine light on the beauty. God laid it on our hearts to do this series on beauty this year. I think it's going to be an absolutely wonderful thing. God laid it on my heart to get focused on the beauty of Charlotte. And I hope you're following this. We have a Facebook page. I've been interviewing all kinds of interesting people, like the guy that makes smoothies in my neighborhood. What to you is beautiful about Charlotte? I've asked little children, what's beautiful about Charlotte? My favorite answer still is the little boy that said, the porcupines. I asked his mom, do y'all have porcupines? No. Beauty. See, everybody knows what's wrong with Charlotte, and you know the RNC is coming, and people have all kinds of moods about that kind of thing. And everybody knows what's wrong with Charlotte. Everybody's tense, you know, traffic and so on. But could we start a movement that would spread beyond our church, get people thinking, what's the beauty in Charlotte? Isn't that the church's job, is to shine the light of beauty on what's there? So we're going to have a program on Tuesday night, and don't ignore me on this. You should come. It's going to be a great thing. I'm going to have a conversation with three pretty remarkable people. Molly Grantham, you see her on the news on Channel 3, but I've gotten to know Molly, and she's an absolutely fascinating person. Some real wisdom and perspective on things. Tom Hanch is going to come. He knows some interesting things from the history of the city and the food scene. He loves to say the world has come to Charlotte out on Central Avenue. That's a beautiful thing. But the main piece of this, and I wasn't going to do the program if I couldn't get him, I asked Harvey Gantt to come. And he said, well, let's talk about it over lunch. So I met Harvey. I don't know if you've gotten to know Harvey Gantt in your life. He is one of God's most beautiful human beings. He's just amazing. We sat at lunch. I said, I want to talk about the beauty of Charlotte. He said, well, if you want me to talk about pretty buildings, and he's designed some of them, he's an architect. He said, or if you want me to talk about the green space that we decided to preserve when I was the mayor, he said, I won't come. I said, okay, we don't have to talk about that. What do you want to talk about? He said, I want to talk about people when they're noble, when they're courageous, when they're good, when they're gentle. He started telling me stories. And my waiter is a guy that I know well. He brought me some tissues. So, you okay? Oh yeah, I'm okay. It's the best lunch I've had in some time. He said, there's so much beauty, there's beauty all around us, and God uses it to speak to us. There's beauty in other people. And, you know, we're starting these little groups. Don't ignore me on this either. Little groups, you can come with some other people, not forever, just for a couple weeks, and talk about things that to you are beautiful. What's beautiful in your home? What's been beautiful in your life? Who's a beautiful person that you know? When we share these things with each other, like it's healing for us, but then we also learn about the beauty of other people, and you build great relationships. Here's something. The beauty, I say this to you all the time. This is a personal thing. Let me share it. I hope it's okay. I say to you all the time, like, you're beautiful. There's beauty in you. There's beauty in other people. And I think we hear that and we go, yeah, there's beauty in other people. I need to try to look for that if I can. If they're not cutting me off in traffic, I don't know. The beauty in other people. Sometimes I think it's easier, I think, to believe that there's beauty in other people than to believe that there's beauty in me. Now, maybe you have no issue with this at all. You look at yourself in the mirror and you go, wow, that is one lovely, it's too weak a word, beautiful bird. You might do that, and if so, I worry about you a little, but I'm someone, I can say all day, other people are beautiful, that's great. But when I look in the mirror, I avert my gaze a little. So here's the thing I want to share. This morning, every morning when I get up, I do this little devotional thing. I read a little bit of Bible, and I got a devotional book. Well, actually, before that, I get coffee. The coffee comes first before God, but it works. So I get my coffee, and this morning, I pull out this devotional book, and I read something that somebody wrote 40 years ago, and it's as if he was right there in the room with me, speaking to me. And here's what it said. I'll just share it with you. I typed it up. A part of you was left behind very early in your life. That part of you that never felt completely received and welcomed. You have to bring home that part of you. And this will not be easy, because you have become a formidable person. You have become a strong person. You complain that it's hard to pray and to experience the love of Jesus. But Jesus dwells in your fearful, never fully received self that was left behind. When you befriend your true self, you'll discover that it is good and beautiful, and you will see Jesus there. There's some part of you, unless you're the one that looks in the mirror and says, I'm just so beautiful. There's some part of you that you lost somewhere. And it's hard to think about going there. So you just move on and you stay busy and you stay strong and you whatever. But God wants you to be able to shine the light on that part of you that it's in there, but it's lost. And maybe it feels like shame, or maybe it feels like brokenness, or maybe it feels like I'm not enough, or maybe it feels like unworthiness, or maybe it feels like fear, maybe it feels like anxiety, I don't know. But God wants you to shine the light on that part of you, and if you do that, if you turn on the light, it turns out that Jesus is there. And then you experience the love of Jesus, and you become whole. Here's the last thing. Again, reading the other day a book that I wouldn't recommend to you, but I do want to read out loud to you. I was reading this theologian named George Adam Smith. He wrote back in the 1800s. And he's writing this eloquent section, kind of old English, you know, flowery and all. It's really beautiful. And he's talking about that God calls us to be a light to others. You know, let your light shine before others. You're to be a light to the nations, all this. And this is so interesting. He's talking about it, and it occurred to me as I was reading that he wrote these words not long before electrification. Right? Once upon a time, there wasn't electricity in these kinds of lights. So if there was light in any room, you couldn't flick a switch and get it, right? You had to light something, a candle or a torch or a lantern, right? So he's writing about being the light in a world that we would think of as dark, where you had to light a light to see your work, to talk about the light. And he says this thing that's really amazing. He said, for light to work, one thing, it needs a surface to reflect. Like if light's just flying along and there's no surface, the light just, it's like if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's there, right? If there's no surface, you don't see the light. But I hold up my hand and there's the surface and you can see my hand, but what you're seeing is really the light coming off my hand. So you need a surface. But then he said, the other thing that you have to have for there to be light is you have to have a wick being consumed. Isn't that interesting? In the world until electrification, there had to be a wick and it had to be burned and consumed. He said, what does that mean for us to be the light? He said, one, there has to be a surface. And he said, that surface is you. That surface is your life. That surface is your character. That surface is your face. It's how you interact with the world. Then he says, what is the wick? He said, the wick is your life offered up to God sacrificially. You say, God, I'm yours. Use me. Use me up. Consume me, because I want to be your light. You can't just flick a switch, right? There has to be some consuming of me, but then that's the joy, because then I become a bright light and I shine it in me and I see that I need not be embarrassed. I'm who I am, and Jesus is there. And then you can shine that light on other people, and if you do this, you always have mercy on them. You don't shine the light on them like you wicked, terrible. No, it's always love. It's always mercy. It's always compassion. And then we become a light to the world. Milton's question, when I consider how my light is spent, how are you spending your light? There's a lot of light in you. How is your light being spent? Friends, it's 2020. Hope we have a wonderful year together with God and for others. There is so much beauty in this room and out there. Thanks be to God.